Football Weekly.
2009 begins with some heading for a trophy and some for atrophy as the FA Cup third round sees Man City add to the magic of the cup by disappearing altogether from the competition. There's full coverage on the way of the third round. It's where the competition comes alive, you know, all the shocks and surprises in today's Football Weekly. Elsewhere, the transfer window. Try not to glaze over as we tackle all the latest news. Is Harry really inviting Jermaine Defoe back to Spurs? And is that what Jermaine meant by threatening phone calls? There's also Sid Lowe, safely back in his Iberian exile, reporting on the return of the Liga. There's your posts, players with chainsaws. And there's the real fastest sendings off ever. All that in today's Soar Away Football Weekly. Hello there, everybody. On board today, it's welcome back to Barry Glendenning.
Hi, James.
Hi, Barry. Happy New Year to you.
And many happy returns.
Excellent. And Kevin McCarris here with us as well.
Hi, James. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Kevin, did you have a busy weekend?
I went to Southampton. It wasn't that busy, really.
No. Okay. Excellent. And shiny and new, like a pod virgin, Marky Stafford. Welcome on board. Marky Stafford.
Mike.
Stafford. Yeah.
That's how new he is.
That's showbiz. You've forgotten him already.
Stafford. No wonder you look so disconcerted. But Stafford's right, isn't it?
Stafford, that's
okay,
right,
good.
Yeah.
Tell us about yourself, Mikey.
Today's my birthday.
No way!
Yeah. I asked my mother, could I be enclosed in a room with Barry Glendenning for an hour for my birthday, and she sorted it out.
Right, most days it's 2 hours, is that right?
It's my birthday as well. Today.
No way! Today?
Today, yeah.
Wow. January listeners, day. This is, it's probably one of, somebody out there is going, wow, that's incredible, it's my birthday as well. So to you, listener, happy birthday! What a well-starred day that this is. And what are you? What star sign is this?
Capricorn.
Who? Capricorn? Mm. Tell us a bit about Capricorns, Mikey.
I have no idea.
Oh, come on. Tell producer Pete. I don't know if we can hear you over there. What are Capricorns like? Barry, do you know this?
Not to be trusted.
Not to be trusted, says producer Pete.
And not interested in horoscopes.
And you're in journalism, despite the fact you can't be trusted. That's remarkable, isn't it?
It's not widely known, but Mikey is actually the hardest working man in sports journalism.
On what basis?
On the basis that he travels the length and breadth of the United Kingdom week after week. He was at the darts last night. He probably did a couple of football matches over the weekend. I think one weekend, were you in all four corners of the UK in the space of 48 hours or something?
Yeah, I actually had to be hung, drawn and quartered for that to happen.
Yeah. He's what's known in the business as a trainee, so he just gets
contracted lots of slaves.
Yeah, contracted yeah. slave.
Right. Okay. Which football games did you go to this weekend, then, Mikey?
Barry set me up for a fall there. I concentrated on the darts this weekend.
Perfect. Perfect.
I went to see Mr. Wenger on Friday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. What did he prescribe?
Mr. Wenger. He was philosophical as always.
All right.
He refused to give himself a mark out of 10 for last year for 2008.
All right.
Yeah. He said he left that to us hacks.
All right, and what mark out of 10 would you give him?
Mr. Wenger?
Mm-hmm.
I'd give him a 6.
Interesting. Well, we'll talk a bit more about your encounter with Arsene on Friday, a bit later on in the pod, because first off, I want to talk about the magic of the Cup, Barry Glendenning. 8 non-league teams, which is a record, of course, for the FA Cup third round, in action. Some big surprises as well. 4 Premier League sides going out, if I'm not mistaken. They are Stoke, Wigan, Bolton and Man City. 2 more are teetering on the brink. Portsmouth, who got a replay facing them of Bristol City, and Chelsea. Pretty dismal performance for them at home to Southend.
Yes,
absolutely. Biggest story, though, has to be the shocker at Eastlands. Man City beaten 3-0 at home to one of the worst teams in the Championship, Kevin McCarra.
Yeah, it's catastrophic, and I also kind of thought that Mark Hughes would do really well, but might be vulnerable because new owners want a new manager.
Mm.
But that's not how it's turned out, is it? I mean, you can't really defend, as he said, can't defend losing 3-0 at home. But he himself is in charge, and there's things about Man City that make you wonder what on earth is going on. Why is Micah Richards so bad? What on earth has happened to Richard Dunn? I mean, these are guys who... Well, okay, Micah Richards was over-promoted, but... Richard Dunn was an absolute stalwart of his side, and now he's one of the biggest liabilities. And I think Mark Hughes, obviously, if he's been given money, he'll be given time. But he's got a lot of work to do to repair his own reputation, because the squad he's got should not be losing, obviously, 3-0 to Nottingham Forest.
Well, indeed.
Although some of the goals were really weird aberrations. But anyway, all credit to Forest, of course, because, I mean, that's from their position, struggling to fit to the Championship, that was an amazing result.
It was an amazing result. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a second. I mean, Mark Hughes was quick to point to the flaws in his squad, which he will presumably be addressing over the next month. But if you cannot get your team motivated enough to avoid a 3-0 defeat at home to a managerless Nottingham Forest, then what can you do?
Well, he's not talking about flaws in a team that were 10th last season at the end. Well, the 10th, I think, end of season under Sven Göran Eriksson. So when did these flaws emerge exactly, and why weren't they spotted?
Barry?
Well, I just wonder, if you fully expect something to happen, does it still count as a shock? Because I wasn't that surprised at all Nottingham Forest beat Manchester City. It was sort of the potential upset, if for want of a better word, of the round. Manchester City's players don't seem motivated in the slightest. It's no surprise that, you know, they weren't up for this game. And I think I read in the paper this morning that apparently some Nottingham Forest supporters are a bit disgruntled that it's being described as a shock, because they're still living in the past when they were winning European Cups and getting to FA Cup finals and being in the top flight. But, you know, fair play to them. But City are dismal, and I don't know how Mark Hughes is holding on to his job.
It's remarkable. Of course, the happy days are on the way back for Forest, who just appointed Billy Davis, who's fresh from his remarkable run, of course, last season with Derby. And Sam David Cutland-Luzinski, that's quite enough names for him, posting in on January the 3rd after that, asking whether it's a question of Mark Hughes being tactically inept, or whether Nottingham Forest have actually just had the greatest motivator and tactician on their bench that they've had for a long time, in the shape of John Pemberton, and now passed him over for Billy Davis. Is that what they've done?
Caretaker managers often get that bit of a bump, don't they? Look at Sunderland. As soon as probably got the permanent post, he suffers a defeat. It doesn't make him a bad manager, but caretaker managers have a habit of, it's something fresh. They tend to get that bit of motivation into the players, and they get a reaction. But I think the Manchester City result is definitely more down to Manchester City than it is to Nottingham Forest.
All right.
Okay. I mean, I think the reaction of the players may be more in response to the fact that an old manager is gone than there's someone new on the bench. You know, I would imagine many of the Sunderland players were reported to have been absolutely overjoyed that Roy Keane was gone, and were probably able to play with that little bit more freedom because they didn't have a chippy Irishman glaring at them from the sideline.
We had a great pod last week when producer Pete was away. Similar vein. Doesn't seem to be much whiff of a plan B, managerially speaking, as Kevin was saying, for Man City. He does seem to be Hughes in charge of their plans for the transfer window, which we'll be talking about later on. For Forest next, it is Derby, Billy Davies' old side, which would be nice for him. Derby only just scraping past Forest Green. I haven't seen the Rams since last season's absolutely dismal performances in the Premier League. I have to say, they haven't improved much. So absolutely, it was hilarious defending. Did you catch any of the highlights of this?
I've seen Derby twice this season before Jewel left, and they always struck me as a puppet missing a couple of strings.
Nice.
They're not good.
Interesting about Forest, by the way, of course, they're just above the relegation zone on goal difference in the Championship. So, you know, the FA Cup's all fine and good, and the Derby game and so on. But it's only a few weeks ago, you know, Colin Caldwell was sort of execrated and kicked out and replaced. I mean, they have been a club in a bit of a shambles. Maybe that was partly cosmetically disguised at the weekend at Man City.
Also about to face Manchester United are Chelsea. That's next weekend in the Premier League. Huge game at Old Trafford. They warmed up for that with a dismal draw at home to Southend. They'll have a replay now in 9 days. All this amid further tales of unrest. Didier Drogba slagging off Scolari.
First of all, Department of Apologies, I think all the press, me included, said they'd cope quite easily about John Terry in these three games and he's missing. They got past West Brom and drew the next two against Southend and Fulham. And that really is alarming if you think a team that's had all these hundreds of millions expended on it can't cope without one centre-half.
Mawal Tree's actually posting in saying Chelsea, he's a bit of a Liverpool fan, so you might want to take this with that in mind. Chelsea are a club in freefall, he says. The standard for the modern Chelsea was set in Mourinho's first and second season. They're nowhere near it now. The bottomless transfer budget, which has kept this farce going for so long, seems to have dried up. We're talking now about a club who lost to Burnley the other day, got muscled into a draw with Fulham, whose fans won't turn up when they're losing, and who are paying Scolari 6 or 8 million a year to do even worse than Grant did. And as he points out, They're, what, 600 million in debt, much of it on a personal loan, with none of it going on a new stadium.
The thing with Chelsea, which I think really will have hurt Chelsea fans, and I would think the entire organisation, was the South End players. Almost, they had sympathy for Chelsea after the game. The South End keeper said, I can see where Chelsea come from. It was difficult for them. We played Telford in the first round of the cup and we were expected to win. And we know how difficult it is when you're being put into a chain with Telford at one end, South End in the middle, and you at the other end. Things aren't going right, really, are they?
They're certainly not. And do you think they're going to get through comfortably in 9 days' time?
Well, they're happier away from home. Hmm. I'm not familiar with Southend's ground, but I don't think it is what Chelsea are used to, so it could be interesting.
There's a certain staleness, isn't there? I think they'll go through too, but in general...
Are you familiar with Southend's ground, though?
Well, I just think Chelsea, thankfully with Terry back, they might cope with Southend. That's my belief.
Right. From Southend, then, to Northend. Preston Northend, where Liverpool...
You sound just like Alan Partridge. Not for the first time.
Where Liverpool enjoyed a victory in their new formation. Gerrard enjoying a free roll, which, given the way his week began, he must have certainly appreciated. But it does seem to work well for them now, and you've got all sorts of positive signs for Liverpool. You've got
they couldn't shackle Gerrard, I know.
You've got Torres back and scoring, set up by Gerrard, who certainly made himself busy in this
just
game.
Just as well Torres is scoring, because Robbie was hapless. Mm. It was comical. It was, as an Irishman, and we always like to see our boys do well, it was painful to watch.
Didn't you think, though, Mikey, that the way Liverpool handled one of these supposedly difficult away games was very impressive? I mean, they dominated that match from start to finish and should have won it far more easily. But they are a very tough team, aren't they? I mean, you know, no matter who they're playing, you don't get through Liverpool easily. You know, and look kind of durable. As you say, if Keane had... played at all, it'd have been five or six.
We were having a bit of an ongoing Robbie Keane debate with our friends there, posting on the website. And where do you stand on the Robbie Keane issue, Mikey?
Robbie Keane is like a lot of Irish footballers, going back to, we just mentioned Richard Dunne earlier, I don't know if it's in our psyche, but he's a confidence player.
Right.
There's a lot of strikers are, but he banged in a couple of goals there not so long ago.
And immediately got dropped.
Yes, yeah. So that doesn't help. Benitez, the tinker man, but at the weekend, he looked like Bambi on roller skates in front of goal. It was unpleasant.
It got to the stage on Satanta where it was ITV that he was being patronised by Andy Townsend, which is a sad state of affairs for any professional footballer.
I'd like to patronise him too. The one thing I can say about him is he wasn't invisible. He wasn't having a bad game in that sense. He did quite a lot of good things until he got a side to the goals, and it all just came apart.
But I've said before on the blog, when I've argued with assorted Liverpool fans over whether Keane was an astute signing by Benitez or not, that, you know, saying that he works hard is kind of damning him with faint praise. You know,
that's what you said about Mikey at the start.
Yes, it is. But, you know, Benitez could throw me a Liverpool shirt and I'd work hard. But
would you, Barry?
I would work hard. You know, I don't want everyone, the cop, giving me grief for not making
effort. Knees gave way.
I actually think if I had played in that game against Preston, I would have scored at least one of the chances that Robbie Keane missed. He really looked awful. Mikey's theory that he might be being weighed down by the yoke of 800 years of oppression from our tyrannical British overlords is actually something I hadn't thought of before.
All right, well, they're going to be playing Everton next, Liverpool, which is going to be very interesting. The pick of the fourth round ties so far, would you say?
Yeah. Everton, I picked them to win the FA Cup, so sadly,
really?
I'm now stuck with this. So.
Okay. Well, you know, they're on a bit of a run, aren't they, despite their strikerless state?
Well, they're the obvious of Man City, aren't they? There's not a lot of money, but there's lots of kind of solidity and reliability about them.
It's nice, actually. This is the 20th anniversary of Hillsborough, and Liverpool Everton obviously contested the final that year, and it's a nice way to mark the anniversary, to see them, two of them, pitted together again.
Certainly is. Now, to speed through the one or two remaining ties from this weekend, Kevin, you went to St Mary's for Southampton Man United. Not much to talk about there. Man United kind of breezed past.
Only the referee, and we could go on about it. I didn't know the first goal was offside. I mean, you couldn't tell with the naked eye, I don't think. But yes, there were mistakes, but it was quite embarrassing to see what an immense gulf there was. Just because Southampton have young players doesn't mean they have good players.
Right. Meanwhile, Man United in the fourth round will face Spurs. Harry Redknapp already complaining all about all the fixtures he has to face, etc., with this cup that he won last. It's a bit disappointing, that, isn't it?
That's ridiculous. I mean, manager complains about his team having to play games. And it's this time of year you hear managers going on about we'll have a push to get into Europe, and then when they get into Europe, all they do is whinge about the fact that they have to play in Europe.
Mm. Portsmouth, we should mention, face a replay with Bristol City after failing to beat them. Tony Adams in all sorts of problems there. Cardiff, meanwhile, will be playing Arsenal in a repeat, naturally, of the 1927 FA Cup final, and a return to St Ninian's for Aaron Ramsey, who looked fantastic for Arsenal at the weekend.
Well, he usually looks fantastic when he gets a game, and he's doing with Aaron Ramsey what he did with Walcott,
right?
Sparing him.
Cesc in his time as well, because he started around 17, no?
Mm.
And do you think he's going to get a real run in the side now with Cesc out?
I think he'll have to.
Right,
needs
you,
must.
You have Wenger's ear in a box in your desk. And so tell us about this encounter you had with him.
Well, he's very personable. On a Friday, he does his broadcast press conference, and then he has a little round table chat with the journalists.
Oh, okay.
And he's not at all on edge like some managers tend to be. He's,
right.
Because he does this strange thing. He thinks before he speaks. Which makes for an interesting press conference.
Mike, can I say
we should try that in here.
Can I say, Mike, that he also likes showing off? He knows that the press aren't all that bright, you know, and he'll have a sparky and imaginative answer to our dumb-witted questions. And he definitely enjoys it. He gives you a sense of a man who's done his work for the week
right.
and is now going to sort of play with the press's minds for a while before going home. So, and a very good fun it is, too.
Was this the press conference where he said basically, the little round table, where he said basically, in 10 years, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So his contention is that he's going to be around in 10 years and then everyone will go, wow, thank you, Arsene, for sorting us out. We may not have won anything in the last 10 years, but we haven't gone bankrupt.
I think so, yes. He's going to be standing there proudly in the shining Emirates and all around him are the shattered remains of the other London football clubs.
Magnificent. Will any of the Wenger Wonga be being used in the transfer market?
He says he has. He says he's hoping to bring in at least one talent, but it has to be an extreme talent because he already has a very talented team.
I read somewhere this morning that he is got his beady eye on Andre Arshavin.
He denied that.
Right.
Well, he's also been I read it in the paper, so it must be true.
I take it back. Sorry, Wenger's wrong. You're right.
He's been linked with various players, including Newcastle's Nzogbia, and who else?
Shea Given has been linked with everyone under the sun at the moment.
I'm sure he'll defy us all and come along with a 14-year-old from Ghana who no one's ever heard of.
Mm.
And yet, at the same time, Peter Hillwood, the chairman, was saying that there isn't much money available for players.
There isn't.
Well, he said. I mean,
yeah.
The impression was that earlier in the season they were saying, oh, Arsene's got money if he wants to spend it. They didn't specify how much money. Was it 10 pence or 10 million or 20 million? You know, but Arsenal's finances is also a mystery because Wenger will never touch upon it. The most he ever says is, that's an interesting topic, and then he doesn't discuss it.
Well, we're going to talk about transfers later on, but one of the issues... on my limited understanding of their situation was that they were supposed to be now suddenly raking it in, and last year they were quoted as having the biggest turnover in football. But was a large proportion of that based on the expectation of the sale of all the apartments they've made out of the old Highbury ground?
Yes,
and is that now gone up the Khyber?
They've got a lot of deposits, but I don't know how many mortgages they've secured.
We don't know the outcome of that one yet.
Okay, so possibly they might be in a little bit of trouble.
Well, they obviously exude a confident image, but people do wonder about property in North London at this time, yes.
Right, okay.
You have property in North London, don't you?
Not really.
Oh, I live in property in North London.
Right. So do all Guardian writers.
I don't. I never go north of the river.
I'll spoil it. The cliche is true. All our readers and all writers all live in North London.
I didn't know that.
But in intellectual property,
just me and my own.
Didn't you wonder how we sell so few copies? It's a small area of North London.
Now, that's enough of a part one for now. In a moment, we'll be having part two with Sid Lowe, hopefully, there in Madrid.
Football Weekly from guardian.co.uk.
Sid Lowe in Spain now joins us. Sid, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello there. Listen, nice to speak to you again after your brief apparition, podside last week.
And Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes, Happy New Year to you too. Feliz Año Nuevo, I think I'm right in saying.
Very good, yeah.
Yes. How's it been? The Spanish already back up and running with their Liga business, yes?
Yeah, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, around the games. And not just that, of course, but they also play the Copa del Rey in midweek, which means that tomorrow night there's an Atletico Madrid-Barcelona game. So for the first time in a long time, people are actually taking some notice of the Copa del Rey. But yeah, the big news, of course, was the return of La Liga. And it's always a bit strange in Spain. Having the Christmas break means everybody comes back, and for kind of a day or so before the game, everybody's kind of scrabbling around and trying to work out what exactly is going on in Spain. And what's going on is, well, pretty much everything, to be honest.
All right. Well, give us some selected highlights. And you've got Barcelona beating plucky Mallorca 3-1. And Thierry Henry in fine form in that game. Is that right?
Yeah, Thierry Henry's playing really, really well. He scored, I think his ninth goal of the season. Really looks quick. He looks strong. He's making things happen for the team. And he really is important. Of course, the problem for Henry may now come with the fact that Andres Iniesta is finally back from injury. And Iniesta's most regular position, even though he's a creative midfielder, has been on the left-hand side of the front foot for Barcelona, which is exactly where Henry's currently playing. But he is playing very, very well. And I think he'll continue to get good minutes. And I think he'll continue to be quite important for them.
Okay, Barcelona continuing their run at the top, while also winning, Valencia went second after beating Atletico Madrid 3-1. Real Madrid, meanwhile, beat Villarreal in a big, big match.
Yeah, 1-0, and 1-0, and there's a bit of a feeling that Real Madrid, they're getting better with Juan de Ramos, but I think it's still too early to say that they're a great side. I think the bottom line is that the really big issue this weekend for Real Madrid was that they're relatively well organised, and they've got Aaron Robben playing fantastically well at one end, and Iker Casillas playing very, very well at the other. And Madrid now, of course, won two 1-0s on the trot against big teams. They beat Valencia just before Christmas and Villarreal just after Christmas. And there's a feeling that the games were very similar. In both cases, Madrid started pretty well, but in both cases, by the end of it, they were perhaps a little bit fortunate in so much as it was the other side in both cases that had more chances. And certainly Villarreal had three or four very good chances towards the end. But, of course, from Real Madrid's point of view, if they can keep Aaron Robben fit right now, there's actually some optimism at last.
That's a big if.
So Cash about
it is a big if, and that's of course the thing that everybody's talking about is will he stay fit, because of course he hasn't so far.
Kevin, you were saying that he's the best player in the world for about 1 month every 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember it might be Martin Jolfink saying that if you understand football, you realise he's better than Cristiano Ronaldo. This is before Ronaldo scored a million goals, of course. But I knew what he meant. I mean, he's very economical, Arjen Robben. He beats a man effortlessly without any twisting, turning or time-wasting trickery. He's just very, very efficient and brilliant. And it's quite annoying that he's so rarely in condition to play at his very peak.
Well, I think that you know what's happening with him is essentially what happened with him at Chelsea, and the justification or if you like the judgment rather on him from Real Madrid fans is pretty much that Chelsea one. It's like, hang on a minute, if only he was fit more often. There's a belief that Real Madrid have dropped a bit of a clanger by buying someone who's so often injured, and he hasn't yet played that run of games. Same as at Chelsea, I think was it 4 years he went without playing six on the trot or something like that. And that still hasn't happened at Real Madrid. But when he plays well, he does look brilliant. And I agree with you, Kevin, in that he doesn't do countless stepovers. What he just does, and he was doing last night because he was on the right-hand side rather than left, is he just basically runs straight at people. And then when they come towards him, he dips a shoulder one way and cuts the inside. And it's amazing. It's always the same trick that everybody falls for every time because he does it with such speed. And he does it in that brilliant running style of his that just looks absolutely absurd with his hands kind of out in front of him. But he's very, very fast and you can't stop him.
Transfer news, Sid. We heard over the Christmas period that Marcos Senna, I think the thinking man's choice is the most valuable player for Spain in Euro 2008, turned down a move to Man City. Is that right?
I'm glad you said that, because I thought he was the best player at Euro 2008. So
we're thinking men.
You've just dubbed me as a thinking man. That's very nice. Well, it's not so much that he's turned it down, as that what's currently happened is that Marcos Senna hasn't yet, or his camp hasn't yet had any kind of formal offer. Senna is in a position in which he would move if the money was right and if the offer was right for Villarreal. The trouble is, of course, that Villarreal would want an extraordinary amount of money to let him go at this stage of the season. Obviously, Man City have that kind of money, so if they really pushed, I think there would be a possibility of getting him. But Senna's camp haven't yet had a formal offer. And so in that sense, there isn't really anything for Senna to go on. So, of course, Senna gets asked about this, and he says, well, I don't know anything about it. And he's telling the truth. He doesn't yet know anything about it. That's not to say that he wouldn't go if the offer came in and it was the right kind of offer. But, of course, the difficulty, as I say, is that Villarreal, who renewed his contract over the summer, now pay him very, very well. And that's one of the reasons for Villarreal's success. They're a very, very financially solvent club. and they would expect a huge offer for him. Truth be told, there's also another slight issue, which is over the last three or four games, Senna has been substituted every time, and this is a guy who played 90 minutes week in, week out last year, and there's a slight feeling that he's perhaps not as central to Pellegrini's plans as he was maybe 6 months ago.
So isn't it a fantastic, if they get an offer of some magnitude for him, isn't he about 32? I mean, wouldn't you sort of bite the hand off while pretending you want to keep him?
I think that's exactly what they'll do, and that's why they would want a fantastic offer, because they believe Manchester City can pay it, and they believe it's potentially a very good opportunity for them. I think he's not quite 32. I think he might only be 30, might even only be 30 or 31. Mm-hmm. I think you're right that there is a sense that, okay, now would be a very good time to take the offer. But, of course, he's a European champion right now. He's very, very popular. He's very well liked, partly because... you know, not only is he a thinking man's player, but he is a thinking man himself. You know, and just seeing a player come out after a match wearing glasses is always a nice treat for everybody.
Very, very interesting indeed, Sid. Thank you so much for that. What are you up to this week?
Well, there's Copa del Rey in midweek, and then off to more games at the weekend.
Wow, crazy! Listen, have a super beginning to your new year, and we look forward to speaking to you possibly ahead of those games on Thursday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Nice one, Sid.
Cheers.
Okay, well, that's enough for part two. In part three, we've got lots of posts. We'll be hearing about footballers tackling opponents with chainsaws and the like. And we'll be diving into the murky waters of the transfer market. Stick around for all of that. And here we are back now with quite literally part three. First off, posts. Interista. Great little post here. To all the pod crew refighting in cut-off jeans, you recall this conversation, Ree Narquin, last week, and it's an appropriate list for a rumble. Interesting points out, the Incredible Hulk regularly fights in cut-off jeans and little else, and has done so with great frequency and, may I add, with great success for years. Or, asks Interesting, is it the flip-flops that really caused the problem there?
Well, you see... The Incredible Hulk is a fictional character.
Right.
And oh. if... In reality, if he grew that big, his entire jeans would rip off. But they have to protect his modesty, obviously.
Right.
So I don't think that really counts. But he does make a good point.
The ball's back in your court, Interista, with that. Private Dick, many thanks for your predictions. Kurt Miro, I know no one in the pod cares. Ooh, that's spooky. But Vietnam won the Southeast Asia Cup, and I, along with more than 80 million others here, was delighted. It was fantastic. All of Hanoi was out in the streets on motorbikes. There were flags waving, pans and pan lids being used as drums and cymbals, singing, dancing and chanting.
You know why we wouldn't understand
why?
Vietnam? Because we weren't there, man. Right, I'm off. See?
That's on my best of list for 2009, as was one of Barry's remarks for 2008, but it got cut out because it was a bit saucy.
Yeah. Yeah, never mind. Breaks.
Yeah, they are. Thanks, Ash and Face for Suprema, for your many limericks. On the Facebook side of things, Bo Giles suggested some fodder for the next pod, which is basically a report in the Daily Telegraph of a football match that was abandoned after a player got shown a red card, but he returned to the pitch brandishing a sword. As you do. I'm just looking for the Daily Telegraph's article on this. It was in Barnsley, South Yorkshire. He returned with a golf club and a long sword. Magnificent. To which Richard Whittall, better known as, by night known as Villa Support Group, has pointed out that he'd forgotten the chainsaw incident. Also from the Daily Telegraph, who were apparently finding a bit of a niche for themselves in match disrupted by player with
weapon.
Bizarre weapon. Footballer tackles opponent with chainsaw. Anthony Lloyd, 20, ordered off a park pitch for foul language, returned with the running power tool and tried to chop the hands off rival Paul Westwood while yelling, "I'm a crank." It was a pretty superfluous announcement, that. My word. He got 12 months imprisonment. Suspended for 2 years. It doesn't sound a lot to me.
It's all very hilarious unless you were actually being pursued by somebody with a chainsaw.
I agree. Now, thanks for your posts and that. Carling Cup over the next couple of days. Spurs Burnley, Derby Man United. How can you not get excited about that?
Well, I'm going to Spurs Burnley, so don't knock it.
Really? Are you excited about it?
Well, I think interested in Burnley. They've had a few exploits this season, haven't they? And so that's worth seeing. But I think two Spurs have to take it seriously after all. So they're defending the trophy.
But they are indeed. And it gets you into the UEFA Cup, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it gets you a place in Europe, you can't see them getting in any other way, shape or form.
It'll give Harry Redknapp something else to complain about. It's nothing more fixtures.
Absolutely. Transfer window then, hey. Let's see, what's happened so far? Wayne Bridge, that's about it so far, isn't it?
Wayne Bridge signed for Manchester City.
100 grand a week, highest paid fullback in the world.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
And he's a good player, and it's a bit of a shame to see him festering in Chelsea, not really getting a run out, so he definitely could be kept busy at Manchester City.
Well, indeed, and some people say, Wayne Bridge is a Chelsea reserve, etc., but so is Sean Wright-Phillips, and some would point out this is exactly, rather than go for the glamorous name, the Ashley Cole, if you will, they're going for a player who might knuckle down and do some work.
Well, our venerable newspaper says they're also going in for Scott Parker, so it does sound like they are building a team of Chelsea rejects.
It's what Hugh said, isn't it? He wasn't going to buy glamorous players. He wanted to solidify the team. But judging by his 3-0 defeat at the weekend, he's on the right track in that policy.
A lot of talk City. I don't know if that's in The Guardian, that they're going to make a one-off payment of around £18 million and include Tal Ben-Haim in a package for Rocky Santa Cruz, which would surprise virtually nobody. You mentioned Scott Parker leaving West Ham, and the situation does look very bleak there. They've just put a decent run together at last, and hey presto, we hear that Gudmundsson, is that his name, the Icelandic fellow?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's now got basically until March to find a buyer for the club, otherwise he's going to be declared insolvent, which would mean probably that West Ham would be put into administration and would be docked 9 points. Is that automatic?
The dreaded words "another Leeds" have been mentioned on several occasions.
Wow. But it is a real possibility now.
Seems to be.
Well, it's hard for him to find a buyer going to pay a satisfactory price when his negotiating position is so weak, isn't it?
Great.
Yeah. Well, I've no axe to grind with West Ham whatsoever, but I think there would be a lot of people would have very little sympathy for them if they got docked points, because a lot of people feel they should have been docked points
over
a couple of years ago over the Tevez affair. But, Bellamy, I think, is another name being linked with Manchester City, isn't he? So, yeah, another Leeds could well be.
Can you imagine, too, that if you wanted to buy West Ham, why not wait until he gets into trouble in the club, into administration, and buy them off the administrator for a knockdown sum? So I think it's really going to be hard for him to sell the club for a lot of money.
You missed your calling, Kevin.
I'm not a very nice person, am I? But seriously, that's what you would think, isn't it? Wait until it goes bust.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway.
So, Zola et les Miserables in a very real sense there at Upton Park. All sorts of bizarre talk about Liverpool selling Xavi Alonso and buying Aaron Lennon in his place. I don't get that at all. It was in one of the major Sundays yesterday. United, can anyone explain this to me? They've just spent, £17 million on two unknown Serbians, both attacking midfielders, who they're not exactly lacking at the moment.
You would guess it's 17 million, ultimately not 17 million at the moment.
Okay.
I would imagine that must be what they could eventually come to if they achieve certain targets. But one of them's 21.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, which suggests that he, in fact, Ferguson said.
And the other one's younger, isn't he?
Yeah, that one's younger.
And he's staying until the end of the season.
Fabian Delph at Leeds United has also been linked to Manchester United, but he'd be, again, amounting to about 10 million. That would make a total of potentially 27 million from Man U in this transfer window, in which they've said they weren't going to do very much. To be fair, the Delph thing actually hasn't happened, but there seems to be a lot of talk about it.
All right, well, who are these two fellas? Zoran Tosic and Adam... Well, I'm not going to try that. Ladjic. Sorry, everyone, that's me. It's not their fault. It's
Ladic, isn't it?
Ladic, is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, but...
L-J-A-J-I-C.
They're both attacking midfielders, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll say one of them. Is it Tosic going to play in the team?
Yeah, I think so. Ferguson's just feathering the nest, really, for years to come, isn't
right.
he? Just in case those scurrilous Madrigals come back again, and then he has a backup plan. But I suppose he probably saw value in him. Vidic worked out, so why not get some more Serbs in?
Indeed so. Well, there you go. If you know anything about those two, maybe you're opposed to living in Serbia and can illuminate us on their provenance and potential, then please do so. One other thing, this Santa Cruz thing that's just grinding its way towards a conclusion, is that actually good business, do you think, for Man City? Or are they buying him a season too late?
What does good business mean to Man City? They'll spend any sum, apparently. I think nobody else would think of spending that amount of money on him. I know he had a good season last season when Mark Hughes was there, has done nothing since. Mark Hughes clearly knows him, and he's better placed than anyone to decide, but it still seems a lot of money for a guy who might still struggle to score goals, unless, of course, Rubinho's laying them in a plate.
While Elano, who people in the know often talk about as being one of the most valuable players there, is being now officially branded a troublemaker and been told to head off to Lazio, which is, of course, home of troublemakers traditionally.
and yet he didn't cause any bother at all under Sven Göran Eriksson, did he? And did pretty well last season.
Sven is perhaps a more accommodating
Emollient,
man. Yeah, indeed.
We were discussing in our last podcast the fastest sending off in history, we were told it was Chippenham's David Pratt, who was sent off 3 seconds into a Southern Premier League game for a lunge on Bashley midfielder Chris Knowles. But apparently that's not the case. It is not the fastest sending off. In October 2000, I read in today's Irish Times, Cross Farm Park Celtic's Lee Todd was dismissed 2 seconds into a Sunday League game. His offence, when the referee blew his whistle to start the game, Todd responded thus, "Fuck me, that was loud."
and
got sent off for using foul and abusive language. Lee Todd was unrepentant. Anyone else would have done the same. He nearly blew my ear off. But that's not the fastest sending off in the world.
You're joking. Ever.
No. There was one, this is also from the Irish Times, thank you, Miss Mary Hannigan, Jamaican Walter Boyd came on as a sub for Swansea a few years back. He took his place at the edge of the box as his team lined up a free kick, had a disagreement with his marker, decked him, and was sent off before the game had even restarted. So 0 seconds.
My word. How did that happen again?
He came on as a sub,
right,
and was in a wall lining up to defend.
But the game was already underway.
Oh, the game was underway, yeah. But before the ref blew for the free kick to be taken, he had decked his marker,
right,
and was sent back.
He was given a red card. Rightly so. Any other transfer rumours that anybody wanted to throw down on the table at this point?
Isn't the four worth a lot of money all of a sudden? What's all that about?
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, twice what they sold him for last year.
I don't know what he's done in the interim. Has he become a superstar when I wasn't looking?
Well, he had an excellent run for Portsmouth.
No, he did. The age he is, he's obviously not better than he was last January. Market forces, you know, it's very, very mysterious.
But I thought prices were coming down, and yet there you are, Spurs.
I don't believe that. I think that, in some cases, yes, but I believe it's not uniform. People speak as if the football economy is all the same. You know, it varies widely. Some people have money, some don't. You know, it's I think we'll see a lot more money spent this January than last January, maybe because of Man City being the starter engine to the whole thing. But I wouldn't be surprised if the sum was greater than January 2008.
Would you presume, Kevin, that as soon as Manchester City express an interest in a player, that player's club will automatically add, you know, a ridiculous number of millions onto
it's obviously the case. But even apart from Man City, teams like Aston Villa have some money to spend, and Newcastle feel that they've got to such an extent. You see them linked with Barry Ferguson, which is amazing, because Barry Ferguson, classic player the way he is, has struggled for fitness since having ankle surgery. And this does not apparently deter Newcastle. Does that sound familiar at Newcastle? A very good player, but I'm not sure about his fitness.
Mikey, you had a theory about January transfers.
I was just thinking it's not the greatest time to go about building a new team.
As Man City seem to be doing.
You don't get good value. Players are reluctant to leave a club, especially if they're good players at good clubs. They're not going to leave mid-season to go play in a relegation scrap. And I did do a little bit of research, strangely enough. Yeah, they gave me 5 minutes off down in the office to actually...
What did you come up with?
They put down the cat of nine tails. I found that if you're going to do business in January, do it abroad. Vidic and Evra were both signed by United in January 06 for £500,000 more than Wayne Bridge is reported to have cost.
Wow.
Also, but then United, go back a season before that, they paid £12 million for Louis Saha.
In the January window.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think a good rule of thumb is go abroad.
Right.
But Sterling's weak, so what are you going to do?
What indeed. What indeed. Well, there you go. That's all terrific. A busy week ahead of us. We'll be bringing you up today on all the latest transfer talk on Thursday, as well as looking forward to a big, big weekend in the Premier League and beyond. The return of City as well, which will be exciting. Indeed so. Two thumbs up there from Barry Glendinning. In the meantime, many, many thanks for an outstanding debut from Mike Stafford.
Thank you very much.
Kevin McCarra.
Thanks, James.
And Barry Baz Glendinning. And, of course, producer Pete, good to have you back. And you there, the listener, delighted you could join us. Be with us on Thursday for now. Bye-bye.